Hang your worries at the door and lay here on the ground. We'll listen to the world doing her rounds.
Plato proposes that the Kora rests between the sensible and the intelligible, through which everything passes, but in which nothing remains. Welcome to the Kora, a podcast that serves as a holding space, a container for encountering the emotional impact of caring and bearing witness to trauma. We'll learn from workers and experts engaged in practices of care who may encounter traumatic circumstances in order to illuminate strategies for stress management and individual growth for everyone. Our goal is to acknowledge the witness and share resources for responding to trauma. The Kora is held by Dr. Stephanie Arell, a PhD in theological studies from Boston University with a specialization in trauma studies and lifelong dedication to somatic health, and Jessica Daugherty, an artist focusing on transformative experience through art and dialogue. Today, we will speak with Cindy, a flight attendant based in the U.S. who has learned how to adapt and respond to intense circumstances through her 25-year career in offering care in the air.
I'm a flight attendant for a major airline. It's a lot of flexibility, a lot of time off. I mainly try to fly with friends, so it's always a fun adventure, even if we're in Cleveland in the middle of snow. Back in 1986, service was fabulous. We used to carve roast in the aisle, serve caviar.
I love flight attendants. I'm not a great flyer. So there was a point at which I was a fine flyer, and then I had an incident on Continental, which doesn't exist anymore. And Cindy, you were actually part of the team of people and mechanisms that helped me get more comfortable flying. Because I'm so afraid of turbulence and I can feel every single thing that happens in the airplane. I can tell when something's a little off. I can tell when there's a change in altitude, but I always watch the faces of the flight attendant because I know whatever they're responding to is the mirror for me. So they actually validate my experience. And if my experience does not match their facial expression. So if I'm afraid, but they look happy, I'm okay. I'm sure I'm not the only one that looks at you as a mirror to identify their level of comfort.
It's true. Because when there is turbulence, now it's a little harder because you're like, you just got to see this, right? You're like,
that's one of the reasons why I'm afraid, because I'm now going to have to rely on eye contact only. Eye contact and body language. This is going to be a project.
We always try to make people comfortable. We, at the beginning of the pandemic, when we didn't have anything, hardly anything. We just had like our crew meals or... Yeah, at that time, I think we only had our crew meals, which was like the snack boxes and a couple little fresh items. But we had a family coming in from, they connected through Dulles, and it was Dulles to LA. And they were moving back from London, and they were staying at an Airbnb. And this was when you can find anything at the grocery store. And they're like, what are we coming back to? They're like, oh, I'm like, it's going to be tough. I'm like, where's your Airbnb at? And they're like, well, by the time you guys get there, it's going to be like 8:30, 9 o'clock. So we went around the plane and we got tissue box. We got toilet paper. One of the pilots had breakfast, but didn't use his two little milk cartons. So we got them, gave them the little milk carton for the kid. And we just put snacks together. I'm like, well, hope this gets you through the night, because like if you don't get to go to the store by the time you get your rental car and everything. And they're like, oh my God, like, thank you so much. But we try to like put something together for them. It's when everything had just canceled and late March, early, no, it was April already. Yeah.
It's a lot of extra emotional labor that you do.
Yeah.
I really envision your enterprise as a flight attendant being engaged in the care of others. I don't know if that rings true for you or not.
Yes, it does. We do have to try to make things happen at 35,000 feet in the air, that on the ground it's so much easier to fulfill people's requests. Up there, it's a different ballgame. If we have a medical situation, if we don't have a passenger that happens to be in the medical field, we have to try to help the person to best of our abilities. We have a service that we call MedLink, and they dispatch us to them, and then we try to take care of the passenger in that way, which makes it difficult at times. But with our training, we pretty much have the basics for basic care. And usually there's always somebody on board that's willing to help.
You mean a doctor or a nurse or somebody that can intervene if somebody's having a medical emergency?
Mm-hmm. Somebody in the medical field that will come in. And
do you call and ask for a medical professional?
Oh yeah, we do. I do have a few colleagues that are nurses on the side, or respiratory therapists or physical therapists, but there's only so much they can do, right? We have this medical kit that's really amazing on our plane. If something was to happen, this kit has everything a doctor might need.
Wow. In your 20 plus years of doing this work, about how many times have you dealt with someone who's sick or having a medical emergency?
Many, 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 many. There was 1 month. Oh, it was the year that Boston won the World Series after like not winning for a gazillion years. every Friday night, we had a medical emergency from San Francisco to Boston. Every Friday night. It was something.
Oh, wow. How do you manage how that must make you feel afterwards? That was a pretty extensive month of caring.
We're like, oh, that was a long night. We'd have a drink, take a nap because we've been flying all night, and little something, and then take a nap. And then I would go hang out and visit with my sister. Sometimes you get off the plane and you're like, oh my God, this was horrible. I need a drink, or, oh, I can't wait to get to the hotel and have a glass of wine. But for the most part, not every day, not every trip. So my colleague calls me and she's like, Cindy, we have a situation back here. This guy's sick. I'm like, okay. And she goes, he doesn't look good. I'm like, he goes, come look at him. I'm like, fine, give me a minute. It's a 787. So there's like 50 rows. I'm at door one. I start walking back. People start stopping me. I'm like, could I have another drink? I'm like, hold on a second. So I call the other girl. I'm like, get so-and-so a drink. And I'm like, excuse me, the Wi-Fi's not working. It took me like 8 minutes to get back there from the time she called, because everybody kept stopping me. Because we're not walking around as we usually do. So therefore, when they do sink someone, they, instead of pressing the button, they just like grab you. So when I finally get back there, I look at him. I'm like, oh God, this guy does not look good. I'm like, well, like, he's been throwing up in the bathroom. We locked it. I'm like, good idea. I'm like, where was he sitting? I'm like, somebody go over there and clean that up. I'm like, how old are you? What, can you take anything? No, I'm just not feeling good. I'm like, I instantly start moving everybody around the surrounding area, kind of like quarantine him in that corner last seat row. I had to move like 9 people. So he's like all empty around him. And everybody's freaking out. The passenger's like, what's going on? And I'm like, just mind your business. I'm like, excuse me, the Wi-Fi. I'm like, it'll come back. We're at 35,000 feet. Just calm down. And I'm trying to delegate some of my colleagues that don't know me. Take me as harsh. I'm like, you do this, you do that. At this point, I'm not doing please and thank you. I'm like, go, 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 just do it. And like, tell the guy, stay right here. Don't move. You get the seat and you don't get to move around at all. And I'm like, should we call for medical help? I'm like, well, he's not passed out. He's conscious. He's just throwing up and looks like crap. And like, we won't call for medical help yet. Let me call MedLink. Let me go to the back to the front, let the cockpit know. I go back up front and I tell my colleague that's working with me in first class, I go, I'm going to go to the cockpit. She goes, perfect. Their meals are ready. I'm like, okay, I'll take them up. I go, I need my water. She goes, you haven't even drank your coffee. I go, I know. She goes, we took off 2 hours ago. I go, you haven't had anything to drink. I'm like, I know, I'm so thirsty. So I go into the cockpit, tell them, guys, symptoms, fever, throwing up, blah, blah, blah. So we call MedLink and she's like, okay, well, move the surrounding area. I'm all done. They're like, clean where he was. I'm like, done. And they're like, lock the bathroom up. I'm all done. And they're like, okay, good. So you're like ahead of the game. He goes, just monitor him. He goes, if he starts throwing up or anything else, we'll follow up with procedures, but just monitor him. Later on, I go back there and he's standing up. I'm like, what are you doing standing up? I go, I told you to stay in your corner. I go, you get to get up to go to the bathroom and that's it. I'm all, unless you need to go to throw up in the bathroom, which is your bathroom locked up already, you get to be in this little corner. You don't get to move to other seats at all. Don't move from that seat. Go back to where I put you. And he's like, but I'm like, no. And then he was standing up and sitting down. I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? Very antsy. But turns out he was having drug withdrawals because he was on a little drug binge while he was in LA for the weekend. Usually if somebody's throwing up and they're sick, we just try to like get him a little cold compress. Here's a little ginger ale, but he was like fever, not feeling good. And so now we have to think everything as possible COVID and take much more precautions than we used to before.
The fact that you moved people around, I'm sure every single person that was sitting near the guy that was sick on the flight where you perceived he has COVID, I'm sure every single one of them appreciated what you did. And also there's not really a form for people to say thank you.
Like, do you have a chance to talk about and go through what happened with your coworkers?
Yeah. Whenever we do have a situation, we have a debriefing with the entire crew. How did you see it go through? Like, what would you have done differently for future references? And then we always have to file a report.
Do they address the emotional aspects or do they basically just address the action?
Only the action. The only time they actually address our emotions, we're just a number to the company. In all reality, we're just a number. And I've told my supervisor that. I'm like, don't BS me. I'm like, I'm just a number. It doesn't matter. I'm like, I've come to the realization of that 8 years into this business. And I go, but I love the time off and I love my friends. Getting paid to go have fun in Cancun or getting paid to go have fun in Barcelona. But the only time they've actually cared about like emotions, when you have an actual evacuation or something traumatic, like losing an engine, having to evacuate the aircraft, something like that, then they're like, how do you feel? They'll pull you off the flight.
Well, there's care that's medical, obviously, like you're directly caring for someone's body. I mean, in the service industry in general, you are closely physically interacting with hundreds of people every day, including all their psyches and everything that they're going through that they project onto you all. So can you talk a little bit about how you perceive that? And how that affects you or how you manage to not let it affect you so you can continue to have a good day?
You don't just don't take it personal. Shortly after I started flying, I realized people are mean and it's not because of me. I'm like, I'm not going to let them ruin my day. There's always a greeter position. Whoever is at the door as a greeter. And we're like, good morning, hello. And they're like, I'm like, oh, bad day. And they're like, yeah, they'll get on board and they start yelling. I'm like, hi, all I said was good morning. I'm like, what's going on? And you try to like size them up if they start barking at you. Or I'm like, not a good morning, I get it. So what's going on? And we try to help them and calm them down or else the entire flight, they're going to be mean. And usually they calm down or like once they get it off. There was so much traffic. I'm like, I know. I drove myself to work today. I know, I get it. I'm like, but now you're here. Have a little bottle of water. Go relax. Enjoy the flight. See you later. We have super nice passengers that right away. They're like, how are you today? Or especially during the holidays, they'll bring like little Starbucks gift cards or little candies or something. We do things for each other that make a world of a difference and make it fun to go to work. We have one captain, we call him Captain Donut, because he will always show up with a box of donuts for the crew. I put a little bag for my crew on Sunday because we work Valentine's. So made everybody a little bag. And one of my colleagues that I was working with, he's like, oh, my wife packed us some lunch for today. I go, oh, I brought this for us today. And like, there's three of us that knew each other. So we all brought something to share. And the pilots are like, are all LA flight attendants like this? At this point, we've all been flying like 15 years plus, because all the junior people have been furloughed. I'm like, you never do anything for your colleagues? I'm like, that's so weird.
This idea of community that you're describing, that's how I would describe it, yeah, is something that helps sustain in times of stress. As a human community, we can work towards fostering our own ability to function within high stress or traumatic situations. And part of that has to do with cultivating joy. I mean, if we get in traumatic circumstances, if you have people with family system issues that are highly traumatic, then the trust and the ability to create community is undermined. So in careers where people are asked to care for others, the staff generally develops pretty close bonds, mutually reciprocal relationships that enable them to face the stress together, especially in the case where there's institutions or corporate bodies behind them that are unidentifiable and who treat the staff like numbers. It becomes a way of defining the self. Can you talk a little bit in relationship to thinking of, say, COVID or even 9/11, how that community became and what it does for you?
I think we've always had that sense of community. I would say more so after 9/11. You know, this is like a hard subject for me, always. Because we lost friends. We went to work. You saw them that morning. They got on a different plane, and then you didn't get to see them again, ever. So that's always been, that's hits us hard every year. I guess you're very glad that you get to fly with your friends and you get to see them. Yesterday we got an email that one of our friends, Greg, passed away of cancer on Sunday. And because of COVID, there's been so many of us that we haven't been able to see or visit or hang out with. And then you get an email that you're never going to see this person again. And they did the voluntary separation packages. And a lot of people took, which is pretty much an early retirement. A lot of people have taken it. And you see people's posts on Facebook are like, oh, if I would have known back in August that was going to be my last flight ever, I would have done things differently. This pandemic has changed everything so much for us, as did 9/11. And there's so many people that you don't get to see anymore.
You're functioning in modes of care multidimensionally. And right there is care of each other. And the other thing that strikes me is that there are rituals that you engage in as a flying community that mark anniversaries, that help you guys mourn and that help you transition in and out of different positions. And so one thing I'm wondering is, what other rituals or things that you would do even daily has COVID affected?
Birthday celebrations on the plane. I've done birthday celebrations on the plane where like I decorate the entire galley for my friend. For many of us, and we're out there walking through up and down the plane, like, hey, do you need something? We couldn't do that. Because at the beginning, there was absolutely nothing we were offering. It was just basically transportation from point A to point B. And we gave them a bottle of water and that was it. We basically give you something and then we leave. But a lot of people, they're like, excuse me. I'm like, and then they instantly take their mask off. I'm like, I wanted to ask you something. I'm like, well, put your mask on. I'm like, the whole purpose is so we don't mix our air together. Even though I'm standing up, you're sitting down, I go, I need you to keep your mask on. I'm like, but I want to ask you something with your mask. I'm like, I'm going to have to leave if you don't put your mask on now. Because people do spit when they talk. But now it's like, this is heaven. I'm like, for me, people wearing a mask is heaven. I always have antibacterial gel in my pocket prior to the pandemic because of that. I don't like the mask because you don't get to see people smile, or it seems less personable.
You handle all of this really well. You just handle everything with aplomb, and the way that you manage it with joy, that shared joy with your colleagues, and how you all support each other is commendable. And I think that when we're challenged to think about how a loss affects the way that we perform daily living, or the way that we perform rituals such as birthdays or transition periods and jobs, the more effective we are at putting a positive spin on that change, having a positive attitude about it, allowing it to offer us a viewpoint towards growth instead of being just the end of something, then we can creatively imagine new ways to function in that new reality. So I don't think that that's exclusive of mourning, and which I think is something to think about industry-wide when there isn't processes of debriefing. So debriefing the entire crew when something happens related to turbulence or the loss of an engine, but not allowing for the feeling of the mourning of the ritual or the mourning of the loss disenables the ability to have that imagination for new rituals. It's not just putting a positive spin on something. It's also thinking about allowing oneself to grieve whatever's lost. And that enables the new framework. I don't want to say it's just positive psychology where we should walk in and feel good about everything and that will make reality change, because
make
I don't think
you make it.
Yeah, I don't think it's that simple. Accompanying the process of changing a framework where you see the positive or the potential in any given situation enables creativity, but there might need to be more emotional work done around that.
Pandemic is a new thing to be dealing with for so many people and so many different jobs and life experiences. So do you think 9/11 perhaps prepared flight attendants for addressing and managing pandemic flying?
No, it's completely different, actually. With 9/11, you became more, you're very aware of, it's a different kind of danger that you look out for. So if someone's sneezing, coughing, you're like, all right, you know. But somebody's coming, rushing towards the cockpit, you're like, hey, where are you going? And they're like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. I'm like, it's right over there. And they're like, oh, okay. So it's a different sense of awareness.
Have you also noticed people, guests needing more emotional care or support, being a little more demanding or a little more put offish towards you all as a result?
No, it's more of a babysitter situation. Put your mask on. You have the passengers that are eyeing everything to, like, they're not wearing a mask. They're like, you need to tell them to wear the mask. You need to do this. I'm like, it's constantly having to be telling people, put your mask on, put your mask on. Mask on. Like, I have to tell you again. Like, if I tell you again, I'm gonna have to write a report. I go, and then you won't be able to fly back on us or wherever again till this is over. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. I'm like, but you said like sorry like 3 times and you're still doing it. You agreed to all this when you got on the plane. I go, don't make me look like a bad guy. I'm like, it's federal law now. They're like, fine.
Right. You're the first line of this discipline or carrying out the rules for mm-hmm. the health of the whole plane.
We're the police, the mask police now. We used to be seatbelt police. Now we're seatbelt and mask police.
Well, thank you for doing that, because I'm sure the repetition is difficult at times, trying to keep people safe. Doesn't seem to me totally like your job description or what your responsibility should be, but you all are doing it anyway.
Thank you.
How do you guys deal with your own fear of exposure?
I'm just very careful, and I try not to live in fear. I'm like, I just try to be very cautious everywhere I go, everything I do. When I go to a restaurant, I'm like, wipe down my table area. And my friend that I now call her my emotional support flight attendant, because we have been flying together for the last 2 months, and we make it a purpose to bid our schedules to fly together. And the times I picked up trips without her, I'm like, oh, I have to go to work without my emotional support friend.
People who work towards the care of others. In the case of a flight attendant, that's about facilitating movement. They're facilitating movement of people in the world to get them from one place to the other. They're facilitating work. They're facilitating travel. They're facilitating fun. They're facilitating the ability for family members to go to a funeral, to a wedding. They're facilitating life. I mean, and then in the process of it, they're serving people in the sky. And in an atmosphere that for the regular everyday person is foreign, so that they're also mediating an experience, right? Because they're help translating what does it mean to be up here in the sky. And some people, that's an easy thing to do. And for others like myself, flying takes effort and is stressful in and of itself. So then they're also mediating an emotional experience by helping people cope with flying. They're mediating a set of rules. Keep everybody safe.
Thank you for listening to The Cora, a podcast created by Dr. Stephanie Arell and co-hosted and produced by myself, Jessica Darty. To learn more about The Cora, please visit stephaniearell.com. The main theme song for The Cora is Bones by Jen Lindsay. The Cora is produced by Shrine 13. For more, visit shrine13.org.